Nels, welcome to Jefferson Public Radio. These days, you are in New York, right? But originally kind of American Southwest?
Yeah, actually, I'm in California now.
Really?
I've landed in Santa Cruz, California.
Okay, what prompted the move back out west?
It's this crazy thing called a job. My wife has one.
Yeah, that's usually a motivating factor. Now, you grew up all over, right?
Yeah.
Bounced around a bit?
Bounced around, then I was in a big chunk of my time in New Mexico, and then New York for the past couple of years.
What was in New Mexico? Why were you there for such a while?
High desert and space and craziness.
Yeah. Well, speaking of craziness, I wanted to ask you what you were doing before music, but I realized that that could really open a can of worms because the stories that I have read about the things you were doing are exhaustive. I mean, you did a little bit of everything, right?
Yeah. Jack of all trades, master of none.
And you lived for a while at the end of a dead end road in a trailer hut of some sort?
Yeah. Well, I lived in this tire house in New Mexico, and it was funny because when the bank asks you for your past addresses to confirm, you know, I realize I need like either a big map with pins or maybe a flow chart. Like I imagine maybe like George, like the Game of Thrones guy does when he arcs out his plot lines. I'm figuring like all my different addresses kind of create this big collage. Yeah.
Were you personally restless or were you running for something?
I think just, you know, open for opportunities.
Yeah. So how did you get into making music?
Well, I'd always made music. And then it was a question of when I decided to try to sell music, I guess.
Was there a point for you where that really happened? Or?
Yeah. I think when I moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I'd followed a girl down there from Taos, New Mexico, which is kind of a mountain, kind of a rural mountain town kind of thing. And I'd moved down to Albuquerque, which is Bright Lights, big city. And, my girlfriend decided that she was done with me and moved to England. And then I was there in this town that kind of a foreign town. And I started playing out and got a band together and start traveling around. And the rest is infamous.
Now, from what I was reading, a break, maybe not the big break, but a break for you was Kerrville.
Yeah.
It was this big music event, a more folk-related music event. And you entered as an emerging songwriter?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that process.
Well, I just heard about it. I'd heard, you know, oh, well, this is where, you know, Lyle Lovett started and Lucinda Williams and, you know, Steve Earle and all these guys had gotten their first kind of stamp of approval from this festival. I'd never been before to the festival. And I sent in a tape and went down there and won the contest, which was cool. It was kind of like a little kind of, you know, keep going, young man.
How many people?
I don't know. It's not a huge, you know, monstrous festival. It's more of a very intense, it's what I've found now that I go all the time is it's the community of songwriters where everyone kind of goes to check in with each other. And it's this amazing, you know, the festival happens and then at night, these little campfires and by campfire, you know, 50 to 100 people. And sometimes they put up pianos and palm trees and they create these little clubs in the middle of the, you know, in the hill country. And all night, you know, till dawn, all these people are coming and all the songwriters who are kind of itinerant songwriters, a lot of them come through and play their new material. And it's kind of a meeting ground, a very fertile thing. And so I knew about the contest. I didn't know about the context of what I was getting into.
So besides feeling good and having this honor bestowed upon you,
yeah,
was there something tangible that happened as a result of winning that thing?
No.
Really?
No, it was just kind of, you know, it just was the beginning to start touring around. I started going out of New Mexico and touring all around, coming up around here and driving all around and stuff. And then I think the first kind of physical break came overseas where the BBC started playing my first record and I started going, and that was kind of the first kind of tangible, oh, wow, there's hundreds of people at this place to come see me play instead of playing to, you know, in between a reggae band and a punk band at a bar in Albuquerque. There's all of a sudden like, you know, fans are singing along and stuff like that. So yeah, I think that was the big kind of break, music business break.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to talk about the BBC in a few minutes because it is a little odd that this guy from New Mexico has his music being played really first in England.
Yeah.
But let's hear some music first.
All right.
What are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play a new song from the record. It's called Starboard. And it's, a New York song.
Thank you. the time you finally came undone. You were there with your family and everyone, in the ragged backseat of a Swedish sedan. How the dried foam yelled at your nervous hands. The dried foam yelled at your nervous hands. You're too tall for the playground, not too young. But you had mixed Robitussin and Malibu rum. But when you kick your feet, the moon rose and fell. Like horses on the carousel. Oh, horses on the carousel. When you come home ragged and you come home curt, we could smell the city on your shirt. By the length of your hem and your torn lapel, we see you sinking in the wishing well. Butterflies in a Bushwick law. They're playing Swiss Family Robinson, little boy lost. How he courted you there like a bower bird. You just could not break him from the herd. You could not break him from the herd. When you come home ragged and you come home curt, we could smell the city on your shirt. By the length of your hem and your torn lapel, we see you sinking in the wishing well. When you're caught between the shore and the sea, you had stopped your stroke to laugh. At your clothes had grown, but you can't go home. For you're neither kit nor calf. You're neither kit nor calf. And so all the pretty fish wanna swim upstream. How we wake up port side of a starboard dream. Bewildered, you didn't ever know. How the curb could cause such vertigo. Oh, the curb could cause such vertigo.
It's Nels Andrews live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, streaming at ijpr.org, a tune from the new album called Scrimshaw. Nels, Scrimshaw, as I was reading, came together, if not exclusively, primarily while you were in New York,
yeah,
right? A lot of the songs formulated there.
Uh-huh.
Being a guy from a relatively rural, open space like New Mexico,
uh-huh,
transplanting to New York, where everything sort of feels like it's sort of leaning in on you, did you ever have a sense of being able to get away from that congestion enough to let the songs and the music flow?
Yeah. At first, I definitely was kind of looking for solace or kind of open spaces when I first got there. And
rooftops, things like that.
Rooftops, yeah. We lived near the water in Greenpoint, so you kind of look out on the water and see the boats, which was kind of refreshing. But then once I kind of got my metabolism up, I loved it.
Yeah,
I really loved it. I had this great community of people and kind of the denseness of the way that people live. And as a songwriter, it's awesome because like any emotion you're having, you look out and it's kind of happening. It's such a street culture, like a public culture. So you're feeling one way and you look and you can see it happening. It's really easy to get detail and get a writerly eye on stuff as it all kind of happens around you.
Did it change the nature of your songs at all, do you think?
I think, yeah, the song, like, they're lyrically denser and they're more about, the landscape is, they're all kind of, a lot of them are set in New York. That's probably it.
And also, while you were in New York, you had a son?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What impact did that have on your ability to actually work on your craft?
Man, how much time do we have here? I had to, it was interesting. I had to make a, I've been chasing around being the troubadour for so many years, and I kind of had to pull the plug on that, and I stayed at home for the first time in a while to be with him.
And it was like a year, right? Like you just took a year off from travel?
Yeah. I took this gig as a chauffeur for this woman in Upper West Side, kind of this aging socialite. And I drove her around, which was good for stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and she got, that was a window into this whole other world of culture and place and everything. And she was fabulous. You know, she was actually fabulous. She was like in the back, "Oh, darling, you'd love my driver. He's a chauffeur. I think he's like an orchestra or something. You should go see him."
Well, and good stories make for good songs. Have any of those stories become songs yet?
Yeah, actually, a lot of them. Should we do another song here? Can I talk about?
Sure.
We could do off the new one. I got one that's about driving around with the Countess. I guess an incidental occurrence that happened with the Countess, and I got to be in Carnegie Hall, which is there's all these apartments above Carnegie Hall where Dale Carnegie set up these places, and they had Marlon Brando studied there, and Marilyn Monroe, and all these people. There's this whole like bohemian community living above Carnegie Hall, and then they evicted them all out. And I wrote a song about it. Want to hear it?
Yeah, let's hear it.
It's called Small Victories off the new record here.
Oh, did you go off the deep end? A fire island for the weekend. Two aliens with jade oceans and gin. Still glossy, the faces on 8x10s and vases. They're all blanketed with plaster that won't. Blanketed the walls. They say goodbye to Brando. Leave Marilyn and Scandal. You will always be the Duchess of Carnegie Hall. Small victories are black and white on the big screen. Well lit and well cast. Take your time and go slow. Out of porcelain bags. Well, a bungalow on Fairfax, the interior lit for the second act. It was over long before you ever even took the stage. So wide-eyed and wanted. All the blue sky blondes are falling for a way to live forever and then slip away young and heartbroken and gold dug. Find you ashing on the silk rug, having chosen no favorites. You'd love them all. Small victories are black and white on the big screen. Well lit and well cast. Take your time. Go slow and easy on the eye. Got a porcelain bag.
It's Nels Andrews live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio and online at ijpr.org. Your previous album, Off Track Betting, and Scrimshaw were separated by about 4 years.
Yeah.
Right? Is that a pretty typical length of time for you to craft another collection of songs?
Yeah, it seems to be. It seems to be. I've taken my sweet time on these things.
Although during that time you were raising a newborn.
Well, right? Yeah, that's true. True. Thanks.
Were there other things going on during that time as well? I mean, you said you had a job as a chauffeur. I mean, that.
Yeah, there was all. We were moving to New York. There was all kinds of big life stuff and things like that. And I think I'm also slow. I mean, I'm always writing songs, but I'm also refining the songs in the end and tossing out songs. And I think I'm slow just to kind of get the actual into the studio, get everything together.
Well, it's such a good collection of songs. I found it really interesting to read that you had described them as being the product of your off hours.
Uh-huh.
Did you work on these at night, at, like after your son had gone to bed?
I found myself, yeah, it was interesting. This group of songs was really interesting because I'd fallen into this songwriting group in the Village, in the West Village, and there was this guy there named Jack Hardy, who was this wizened old product of kind of like the post Dave Von Ronk, Dylan, West Village times. And he had been having this assembly of songwriters in his living room for, I don't know, 20 years or something like that. And you bring in a couple bucks, you throw it in the pot, and he would make up a big thing of pasta and some wine. And it was kind of like grad school for folk music. You'd bring in something you'd written, had to be something you'd written that week, maybe in pieces or something like that, and then be prepared to defend it. You know, and this is where Suzanne Vega wrote all her songs, and Tracy Chapman, you know, Fast Car, everything came through this. And like on the walls are Ramblin' Jack Elliott and Tom Waits. But then it was just this real kind of assembly of songwriters coming through, and very journeyman songwriters living in there, and then old Jack himself sitting at the end of the couch with the yay or nay on whether or not you should keep going with said song. And so I wrote and scrambled these things at night and then brought them into Jack's every week. It was kind of a new way of doing it for me.
I love the way you put that, that you were there to defend them. Right?
Right.
I mean, were you under attack?
Oh, others? Yeah. The Sharks were out.
Really? With the goal of there being a collective improvement upon everybody's individual work?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally for the song's sake. A lot of times I've done it in Nashville and it's for money's sake. Mm. And this is for totally, it was all very altruistic. I think people who loved the song the most and they wanted to see the songs succeed.
So there was some pain, but you still wanted to go every week.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Scrimshaw. Where does the title come from?
Let's see. Well, it comes from a big obsession I had with whales and whaling that started a couple years ago.
You're going to have to elaborate. I won't let that one go
well,
by.
Well, it's a Pomo record being post Moby Dick. I became obsessed with Moby. I was taking my kid to the Natural History Museum there, you know.
Oh, yeah, where they have the full size.
And they got the full size thing, and I was like, felt so little there, you know. And then I went upstairs, and they had this thing about cetaceans and this theory that cetaceans came into the land, and then they went back out into the water. They're the original kind of like the anti-back to landers because they returned to the ocean, basically gave up on all of us here and went back into the deep, deep hollows. And I was like, oh, man. So I started reading Moby Dick, and then it became Mariner's memoirs and all this kind of stuff. And I really what you learn is that the whaling boats, you know, they go out for 3 years at a time, and then there'd be these big furied things of the hunt, and then be all this downtime. So there was this all the like music, literature, painting, you know, when you go to some of these museums and there's this whole wealth of arts that poked up as a result of these people with all this downtime and adventure, you know? So this time I spent with my kid, I kind of figured was kind of like my little downtime. It was kind of, so I was scrimshawing these little stories. Scrimshaw is like the little bow on whale and ivory. You would tell the stories of where you'd been and stuff like that. So this is my scrimshaw here.
How's your obsession now?
I hit rock bottom. I found myself at Moby Dick the Opera in Dallas, right, on an off night. And I was like, I got to get help. I got to get help. So now I'm reading about Jacques Cousteau. I've transferred over into other undersea mariners.
Let's talk about the United Kingdom. Because as we mentioned earlier, your album started getting played by BBC Radio. Like,
yeah.
How does that move from New Mexico straight to the BBC? And this was largely before you were even getting play here in the States, right?
That was really cool. I just sent my record. Somebody said, you know, there's a guy in London who he had started this thing called Old Grey Whistle Test. And if you look at, you know, he's the guy who brought Bob Marley to the UK. And, you know, on the Zeppelin DVDs, he's the guy interviewing. Or the Tom Petty DVD, Running Down a Dream. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, going over to the Old Grey Whistle Test. He was the tastemaker in the UK. And he still has a radio show. And he listens to every record, and I just sent it, like no radio promoter or anything. I just sent this little package of my record, and he started playing it a lot. The first record, Sunday Shoes, and then it made it opened up all these doors that we were able to go and tour and all that kind of stuff. So dumb luck, I guess.
So what's going on over there that an American folk musician can find support for a record easier than finding support for it here at home?
I don't know. I don't. I think that's been the way since what? I don't know. Jazz, blues.
Right. When right. Any the American export, art forms.
Yeah. I mean, I saw this thing up in Seattle on Hendrix's big thing in London over, you know, I don't know. Huh. I don't know.
And for the new record, you did a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Kickstarter campaign. How did that work out?
It was great.
Had you done one before?
No.
And this is the online forum where you basically set an amount that you want to raise, uh-huh. and individuals from $5 up contribute to help you cover the cost of either recording or producing or mm-hmm. everything with a new album. How many people contributed?
Something like 100. I don't know. It seems like as the record stopped selling, we're moving back into this kind of like feudal thing of the patron. Except the patron is you, listener.
Yeah.
And I think
you offered up all sorts of different incentives
right.
to encourage, you know, like autographed copies of the album and there was a book.
Yeah.
A book form of it.
And yeah, no one yeah. took me up on the whale watch.
You know, you're not that far away from prime whale watching
really?
Over on the coast.
Really?
Yeah. You also, on that Kickstarter page, you also actually posted, and I found this really interesting, the Spotify financials
uh-huh.
of how that all works out for an artist. And it's this ridiculously small amount per play.
It's not good.
That worked out to like a tank of gas, basically.
Right.
Where do you look? I mean, now as an independent artist, you know, releasing music yourself, where do you look now for not only a way to get your music in front of potential fans, but a way to really monetize that? Is it nowadays radio? Is it online? Is it simply performing live and standing in front of people?
I think that's going to be it. I think that's the way.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there was a cool time when there was like the beginning of the dawn of the indie music thing. You know, when that first record came out, we sold all these records and all the records, money went in my pocket and it was really great. I think now it's kind of coming to town and showing up and opening up the trunk and selling records, I think.
Do you like doing that? Is it fun to press hands, literally press flesh?
I go through love and hate relationships with it. I do. Yeah. The adventure I do like, I like the interaction that comes from knowing that the music is going out and coming back. I also like being at home too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're thrilled to have you here. Uh-huh. It's been a real pleasure talking. The new album is called Scrimshaw. What are you going to wrap up with today?
I'll wrap up with my Leaving New York song. It's called Wisteria.
Oh, you be the brownstone, and I'll be wisteria. You make me rush in the springtime. And close as you've grown to me, you'll stay mysterious, the butterfly lash of a new vine. 'Cause there in the morning sun up, where the blossoms were, you cling to me, shuttle woven. And gossamer, you can make a pigeon coo, a meadowlark song. Oh, you can make a pigeon coo, a meadowlark song. The creek bed and you were still wilderness, caught on the cuff of a morning cold, and then sprung from the cobblestone to couples in evening dress, swoon oak moss and amber around your throat. 'Cause streets of a certain age grow thin from the tireless feet. What do they want? I am only 7th Street. You can make a pigeon coo, a meadowlark song. Oh, you can make a pigeon coo, a meadowlark song. Brownstone and I'll be wisteria. You pick me up when our autumn falls, and then softened by chandelier ever, ethereal memories in oils on our plaster walls. Oh, goodbye, New Amsterdam, there where our memories hung. We may be old, but the night and the world are young, and you can make a pigeon coo, a meadowlark song. Oh, you can make a pigeon coo, a meadowlark song.
Wisteria is music from Nels Andrews live in the studio of Jefferson Public Radio today. The new album is called Scrimshaw. Nels, a pleasure to meet you. Thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.